Thank you and welcome back. It's exactly 6 minutes past the hour. Let me just take a moment to tell you about my friend and the distinguished doctor who will be with us for the next 30 minutes as Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Joseph Kostic, who is a very talented cardiothoracic surgeon, and he holds the leadership position at Deborah Heart and Lung Center as director of thoracic surgery. And just terrific man. Dr. Joseph Kostic is a cardiothoracic surgeon, board certified in general surgery and thoracic and cardiac surgery. Dr. Kostic earned his medical degree at New York College of Osteopathic Medicine. After medical school, he completed a residency in general surgery at Michigan Osteopathic Medical Center. He also completed a fellowship in cardiothoracic surgery at Deborah Heart and Lung Center in Browns Mills, New Jersey. Dr. Kostic's special interests include cardiothoracic surgery and minimally invasive thoracic surgery. He has authored numerous articles in peer-reviewed medical journals and joins us now. Doctor, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Harry. Thank you so much for having me back on your program.
It is great, and the topic couldn't be more important, and it's the same time next year appointment. We do this at least once a year with Dr. Kostic, this very important topic of lung cancer, which in one way or another affects everyone. I've told Dr. Kostic on and off air that I lost both my parents to lung cancer. This is something that my brothers and sisters are very well aware of and we've been exposed to. And just about everybody, doctor, knows someone that has dealt with this. Actually, a friend of mine is having a surgery in the very near future, and it is a lung cancer issue. So let's get going. We have a lot of ground to cover. Dr. Kostic, what is lung cancer?
You know, cancer in general refers to a disease that is characterized by the development of abnormal cells that kind of divide rather uncontrollably and very quickly. And not only that, these cells have the ability to grow into and destroy normal body tissue, as well as travel throughout the body, metastasize.
What are the symptoms? Because we hear, and tell me if this is accurate, we hear that with lung cancer, for example, unless you get lucky, like an accidental finding, maybe you had a belly ache and you had imaging done, and oh, look at this, but you didn't have any symptoms yet of the nodule or the tumor or whatever it is that could be on the lung, but you got lucky and it got found incidentally. Lung cancer is tough to get early unless you get lucky. Is that a fair comment?
That is so true. You know, when we talk about symptoms in lung cancer, the problem is there are often none or very few symptoms that we can really attribute to the disease. Unfortunately, we often don't see symptoms until the tumor becomes quite large and grows into or blocks off something else. The vast majority of the patients that we are seeing nowadays are just as you mentioned. They're being screened for something else, and we find the lung nodule, and then we find the diagnosis of cancer from that.
So if you do have symptoms, chances, and it's lung cancer and you have symptoms, chances are you're in a late stage, correct?
Unfortunately, that's true, yes.
And what are those symptoms?
You know, more common ones that we see are coughing, shortness of breath, chest pain, and of course, any time there is blood in your sputum, that's a warning sign for us.
Mm. How about risk factors?
You know, when we look for the epidemiology, that is to say the causes of something, for lung cancer, these are primarily environmental in nature. Things like smoking, radon from ground sources, asbestos, radioactive ores, and even kind of strange, even the x-rays we are taking today and the radiation from them can ultimately lead to cancer.
Mm. And then we do these things, though, because I guess it's determined, hey, you need the image, you've got to do it. So it's a risk-reward thing, isn't it?
We do try and be much more careful and more poignant with our x-rays than we ever have been in the past.
Talk about the stages of lung cancer. How many are there?
You know, similar to many cancers, lung cancer can be broken down into stages. And classically, there are four stages of lung cancer. And these primarily look at where the lung cancer cells are located, the size of the tumor, and if they've spread outside of the lung itself into the lymph nodes or even worse, to some other part of the body.
You know, we talked earlier, and you actually did. I posed the question. You talked earlier. We were talking about symptoms and things like that. If you discover lung cancer in a patient and they're in a very late stage, is it typical that that cancer has spread to other parts of the body?
You know, the bigger it becomes and the longer it's been there, the more concerned we are for its metastatic process. So that is very true. We do get worried about that.
In terms of you get the diagnosis, and when people hear certain things, if you hear you have pancreatic cancer or lung cancer, I forget the other one, glioblastoma or whatever it's called, the brain one, you almost feel like 100% death sentence. But lung cancer, people are treated, people are cured, correct?
Yeah, although the diagnosis of any type of cancer, and in particular lung and pancreatic, as you mentioned, can be devastating for someone, it is by no means a death sentence. You know, we continue to work on a daily basis to make strides in the treatment of this disease. We now have new drugs available for us and new surgical techniques. So we are continually working on lowering the risk of death from lung cancer.
If you were to catch lung cancer, and again, it would probably, if you got it in stage one, you probably got it and you won the lottery. You got lucky. It was found for reasons we talked about before, Dr. Kostic. If you get it early, outcomes can be very good, correct?
Yeah, as with any cancer, the earlier the stage, the better the outcome. So if we can get you hopefully into a surgical state or an early chemotherapy or radiation therapy state, outcomes have improved greatly over the past several years.
I'm not a doctor, but Dr. Kostic is, and I still know what I know, and that is that smoking is what did in both my parents a long, long time ago, 1980, 76 for my mother, 81 for my father. Can you explain, Dr. Kostic, the link between lung cancer and smoking?
Yeah, according to the CDC, smoking is linked to about 80 to 90% of the lung cancer cases that we see in the United States. You know, a cigarette smoke contains a toxic mix of chemicals. Many of them are already classified as carcinogenic, that is, cancer-causing. And when the lung cells are exposed to these chemicals, there can actually be direct DNA damage, there can be inflammation, and those chemicals can also impair the body's own immune function, the ability to fight against these cancer cells themselves.
The topic is lung cancer. The program is Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. And today our distinguished guest is Dr. Joseph Kostic, Director of Thoracic Surgery Program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Heredity, if lung cancer is because you smoked and not because of necessarily your genes, how much of lung cancer is there the familial, the heredity factor?
You know, we do see certain types of cancer that you are at a high risk for if you had the genetic predisposition for it. That does play a small role in lung cancer, but primarily the environmental risk factors are much worse.
Now, years ago, this was big time a problem because even on planes, you know, you were in an ashtray, basically, people smoking right next to you, behind you, in front of you. So the smoke was everywhere, restaurants, everywhere you went. Things have improved, as you know, Dr. Kostic, a lot in terms of, you know, where you can smoke and where you can't smoke. Obviously, I'm a big fan of that because if you choose to be a non-smoker, I always felt it was really unfair that you then became a secondhand smoker. So tell us about secondhand smoking. How much of a risk is that in terms of getting lung cancer? I suspect it's pretty substantial.
Yeah, I know in our previous discussions, we both grew up in smoking households.
Yep.
It was very common back in the day. You know, when a non-smoker is exposed to secondhand smoke, the risk of developing lung cancer is increased by 20 to 30%. And this is going to account for about 7,000 people a year dying from secondhand smoke.
That really lived a life choosing to be a non-smoker.
Yes.
It's cruel. It's actually cruel. How about, you know, this is almost, I feel stupid saying this, but I'm going to just say it as a wild card question. A smoker can also be a victim of not smoking at the time, But being in a room where there's a lot of smoke, if it's a, you know, who knows, party where a lot of people are smoking and so on, even if you're not smoking and you are a smoker, you are exposed to that in sort of a non-smoking setting yourself.
Absolutely true. And smokers tended to congregate back in the day. And they were often congregated in smaller rooms and smoking, and it's kind of the double whammy, yes.
Again, Captain Obvious here reporting for duty, Dr. Kostic, but I want to pose the question anyhow. We talked about secondhand smoking, so that's how a non-smoker could contract cancer. But can a non-smoker develop lung cancer in other ways?
Absolutely true. And one of the biggest areas of rise in lung cancer that we are seeing are women non-smokers. Again, we're still looking to try and explain this link. Those who, even if they don't smoke, although smoking is by far the highest risk factor, you can still develop lung cancer.
We only take one break during Dr. Kostic's appearance, and it's going to be right now just for a little bit. And when we come back, we have much more important content on the topic of lung cancer. I have a very strong dislike for these e-cigarettes from the first second I saw one. And someone was telling me, oh, this is great. It's, you know, you get, nothing bad can happen. I said, look, you're inhaling. I said, don't tell me. I said, I'm seeing that smoke cloud coming out. I said, I can't believe you're telling me that this is safe. I said, we're going to wait till we learn about these e-cigarettes. And we're still learning, Dr. Kostic. And we've seen these things with the lung damage and things. We're going to talk about that next. Also about smokeless tobacco, because there are still people that you see and they have like a bottle, they're spitting into this thing and they got the whole fat lip at the bottom packed in with the smokeless tobacco. We're going to unfortunately talk about those unpleasant things when we come back. The topic with Dr. Joseph Kostic is lung cancer, and it is DeBora Heart and Lung Center. To make an appointment, two simple ways to do it. If you're a digital person, it's so simple. Go to demanddebora.org. There is a hyperlink, a little speed block. You'll see it right there. You can't miss it to make an appointment. You can do it right there digitally. Or if you prefer to speak to someone, 609-621-2080. 609-621-2080. Back with Dr. Kostic in just a few minutes.
Early in the morning, WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and on the WPG Talk Radio app.
Hi, it's Mark Lee and Van Camp. Join us later today at 1.
Now back to Hurley in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station.
It always does with Dr. Kostic. It goes so fast. Let's make it count. We've got about 11, 12 minutes and a lot more content that we're going to cover. It's DeBora Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Joseph Kostic, who is the director of thoracic surgery program at DeBora Heart and Lung Center. And the topic this half hour on DeBora Heart and Lung Center presents is lung cancer. To make an appointment, demanddebora.org digitally, very simple to do. Or if you prefer, call 609-621-2080 to make an appointment, 609-621-2080. All right, so I teased the next question right before the break, Dr. Kostic, so you know where I'm going. E-cigarettes, as you know, I have a strong dislike of these things. Do they cause cancer?
You know, it does sound like a great alternative, doesn't it?
Yep.
Well, it may not be the case. The FDA does not regulate any of these products at all. And we have noted formaldehyde, volatile organic compounds, flavoring chemicals, including vitamin E. And we know these should not be inhaled into your lungs for many different reasons. There have actually been several animal studies which show they may actually stimulate cancer growth.
Wow. And there's been things like popcorn lung and stuff like that, right?
Absolutely true. And it's all from inhaling these foreign substances directly into your lungs.
So we know in some cases, New Jersey, for example, outlawed, I think, and maybe the federal government stepped in too, outlawed the different flavors because obviously that was, you know, cherry and all these delicious things. So now the menthol, I think, is legal. So I guess they're trying to catch up with this product, but it really did get ahead of things, didn't it?
It really did. And what we actually found out was that one company would market under several different brand names. So even if we were able to pull one off the market, it was still being presented to the public under different forms. So it was very difficult to regulate in the very beginning, but we have made some improvements.
Is there much data on the effects of e-smoking, or is that still in the works right now?
You know, that's still in the works. Because it's not regulated by the FDA, we don't get any hard, concrete data back from any group yet. So we're still looking into the e-cigarettes, not only its lung cancer causes, but lung disease causes.
These are things, though, that if you happen to do them, it has put people on ventilators, hasn't it?
100%. And it wasn't that long ago, just prior to COVID, where we had a rash of extremely young people becoming very sick and even dying from what they were inhaling from these devices.
Here's another awful product, smokeless tobacco. People, as you know, it's amazing to me. You try to scare people straight, the commercials, you know, with the fried eggs, with this is your brain on drugs. And then they show you these things with people's jaws gone and the unbelievable oral cancers and things. But people still do smokeless tobacco, don't they?
Absolutely true. It's that craving for nicotine that really sparks them from one product to another product.
This sounds like I'm repeating a question, but it is a standalone question. How is lung cancer diagnosed? And then as a standalone follow-up, how is it treated?
Well, you know, that's the problem we have in those of us who treat lung cancer is the diagnosis. Because our lungs are protected by the rib cage and the muscles from the chest, we can't see or feel these spots. Because of this, we rely on x-ray approach, either with a routine chest x-ray or another technique called a low-dose CAT scan. And then to follow up with the rest of your answer, depending on what stage you are, depends on what treatment we can offer you. Patients can be offered surgical resection, chemotherapy, and radiation therapy, or a combination of one or all three, depending on what stage you are.
I know everyone is different, and it's a tough question for me to verbalize, but what are outcomes? I mean, when someone hears stage one cancer, stage two, stage three, stage four, whatever, do we have a working idea of how long that person either has to live or the likelihood that there can be a good result to have a normal life and normal life expectancy, or is it hit or miss?
You know, we are getting better, but it is still the leading cancer killer in the United States. And we are making strides. We have two new different types of chemotherapy, and they are immunotherapy and checkpoint inhibitors, where we've actually got drugs that concentrate more on the cancer cells and less on the body's own cells. But we still, in this day and age, still do not well with the treatment of lung cancer. Everybody is a little bit different, and certainly the earlier stage we get it, the better off our results are. But we still struggle with the disease even in 2023.
Is lung cancer, Dr. Kostic, curable?
Yes, if we can get to the right treatment and early enough, statistically, we have better results than even 5 years ago in the treatment of this disease. So we can cure this if we get to it early and are able to get our treatments done quickly.
Every single interview that we do on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents, we talk about prevention. Preventing something, obviously preventing something from happening is a phenomenal outcome. Then you're not treating anything with treatment or surgery or medicine or anything. You've prevented it. Can you prevent lung cancer?
Well, there are some things we can do to help prevent lung cancer and even any other cancers. If you do not smoke, please do not start. And if you do, please make every effort to stop. If you can stop smoking for at least 10 years, your risk of developing lung cancer drops by half. So that becomes very important for us. Radon testing for your home, especially if you have a basement, this is from the ground deposits, and you can get a testing kit at your local home improvement store. And as a general good rule of thumb, exercise and a healthy lifestyle will not only lower your risk of several forms of cancer, but also heart disease and diabetes and several other medical problems.
You raise the issue of, if you are a smoker, to stop smoking. I obviously could not agree with that anymore. And there's also a good reason to. Obviously, you can help yourself in terms of a future issue with lung cancer and other problems. And also, after a certain period of time, the lungs repair, don't they? That you can actually become the equivalent of a non-smoker, right?
Yeah, as far as the risk factor of cancer, you're still always at a slightly higher risk. But if we can go over 10 years without smoking, that risk drops dramatically. So it becomes very important for any of our listeners who are smoking to make every effort to stop. I realize it's not easy, and people often struggle with this, but there are many ways and many forms available to help you quit smoking.
And why do you recommend Deborah Heart Lung Center for lung cancer treatment?
You know, when you specialize in something, I believe you become more efficient and even better at something. You wouldn't want your field goal kicker throwing passes on a routine, right? And at Deborah, all we're going to see are heart, lung, and vascular patients, and we get very good at what we're able to do here.
If someone listening right now, and I think sometimes people are afraid, you know, they just suffer in silence. If someone finds out that they have lung cancer, what would you say to them? Because I'm a firm believer that a person's attitude, their own psychology, is a really big part of their treatment. Do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. Those immeasurable factors that we see, you know, that have people seemingly with the same disease and one doing much better than the other, I can't overemphasize a positive attitude and a good approach to any kind of medical treatment.
Closing comment, and then if there's anything you want to share in closing, the time is yours, Dr. Kostic. I want to just slip this in as a end of the segment bonus question. How far along have we come in terms of advancements in treating and dealing with the issue of lung cancer?
You know, we've made some great advancements over the last 10 to 15 years with the new drug treatments that are available and new modalities for diagnosing lung cancer early. There is a way of looking into the lungs now with a robot where we can biopsy very, very small lung nodules. So we are making advancements. And one of the greatest advancements that just happened, it's going to be breaking news yesterday, as a matter of fact, the American Cancer Society updated and changed their recommendations for lung cancer screening. So now the recommendation is if you are 50 to 80 years old who smoke or have formerly smoked and have a 20-pack years history, that's one pack a day for over 20 years, you now qualify for lung cancer screening. And by expanding this group, the new guidelines means that about 5 million more people are eligible for screening. And this will help us catch the disease much earlier.
What do you say to children that, I mean, because remember when they had a recommendation, I think it was something like 50, to have a colonoscopy at 50. Well, that's coming down. And then if you have familial type, you know, heredity, is even earlier than that because they found that, you know, that was the right thing to do. If you're the child of someone that has had lung cancer, do you qualify? And or even if you don't qualify, is screening something that you should consider?
Absolutely. And there's a great way. And Deborah has a new website, mylungscore.org. You can also pick that up on the demanddeborah.org website. And this is a great way for people to get a general sense on whether or not they qualify for lung cancer screening. But I always do recommend, if you are concerned about any medical problem, seeing your primary doctor, seeing a specialist as early as we can to put this issue to rest, and hopefully you don't have to worry about it ever again.
You are so great at what you do, and you're also wonderful on the radio. This is so helpful to so many people that are listening. And a reminder to make an appointment, demanddeborah.org, or you can call 609-621-2080. To schedule an appointment. I hate the topic, but I love doing the show with you, Dr. Kostic.
Thank you so much, Harry.
Have a great day, sir.
You too.
Thank you. Isn't he wonderful? We'll be right back. 609-407-1450. Phone lines are open. Your turn to play next. This is
Early in the Morning.